Welcome to The Patriot, 1776. Hi, this is John Mady, and I am the pastor of Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers, Florida. And who is the Patriot of 1776? You are, and I am, and so is everyone who loves America and wants to follow the principles of our founding fathers. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence reads like this: "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." If it had not been for the Patriots of 1776, we would still be paying taxes to England and drinking a spot of tea at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Help us win back America now, just like the Patriots of 1776 won America in the first place. You should take notes and use your Bible. We will give you our mailing address later. Well, it's good to be back with you, and we're going to continue on with our program describing America and its freedoms and how to keep them and how we lose them. And so just a real quick review of freedoms in the world started around 1215 with the Magna Carta. In 1611, a very important thing for the United States and the world is that the King James Bible was translated. And in 1769, we have Blackstone's Law Commentaries that were written. And then the next important thing that we've talked about is the Communist Manifesto and what it is. And of course, that was Karl Marx that wrote that along with his compadre, Friedrich Engels. And then in 1850, there was a book written called The Law. And this book was written by a man named Friedrich Bastiat. And Friedrich Bastiat, whenever Marx would write something and try to convince people of communism, Friedrich Bastiat would write something and tell how inappropriate it was for mankind and how that it was wrong for mankind to go towards communism, but rather to have freedom. And so, just to tell something real quick about Friedrich Bastiat, he was a French economist, he was a statesman, and he was an author. And he did most of his writing during the years just before and just after the Revolutionary War of France in February of 1848. This was a period when France was rapidly turning to complete socialism. And so Mr. Bastiat was studying and explaining each socialist fallacy as it appeared. And he explained how socialism must inevitably degenerate into communism. But most of his countrymen chose to ignore this. And The Law is here presented again because the same situation exists in America today as in the France of 1848. The same socialistic communistic ideas and plans that were then adopted in France are now sweeping America. The explanations and arguments then advanced against socialism by Mr. Bastiat are, word for word, equally valid today. His ideas deserve a serious hearing. So we read last week just an introduction to his book. And this week we'll continue and make comments as we go along. And the thing we're going to start with tonight is what he has entitled A Fatal Tendency of Mankind. And so let's quote this, let's read it. "Self-preservation and self-development are common aspirations among all people. And if everyone enjoyed the unrestricted aspirations among all the people, and if everyone enjoyed the unrestricted use of his faculties and the free disposition of the fruits of his labor, social progress would be ceaseless, uninterrupted, and unfailing. But there is also another tendency that is common among people. When they can, they wish to live and prosper at the expense of others. This is no rash accusation, nor does it come from a gloomy and uncharitable spirit. The annals of history bear witness to the truth of it, and the incessant wars, mass migrations, religious persecutions, universal slavery, dishonesty in commerce, and monopolies. And this fatal desire has its origin in the very nature of man, in that primitive, universal, and insuppressible instinct that impels him to satisfy his desires with the least possible pain. And then his next his next paragraph, he calls it the property and plunder. And man can live and satisfy his wants only by ceaseless labor, by the ceaseless application of his faculties to natural resources. This process is the origin of property. But it is also true that a man may live and satisfy his wants by seizing and consuming the products of the labor of others. This process is the origin of plunder. Now, since man is naturally inclined to avoid pain, and since labor is pain in itself, it follows that men will resort to plunder whenever plunder is easier than work. History shows this quite clearly, and under these conditions, neither religion nor morality can stop it. What then does plunder stop? Or we should say, when then does plunder stop? It stops when it becomes more painful and more dangerous than labor. It is evident then that the proper purpose of law is to use the power of its collective force to stop this fatal tendency to plunder instead of to work. All the measures of the law should protect property and punish plunder. But generally, the law is made by one man or one class of men. And since law cannot operate without the sanction and support of a dominating force, this force must be entrusted to those who make the laws. This fact, combined with the fatal tendency that exists in the heart of man to satisfy his wants with the least possible effort, explains the almost universal perversion of the law. Thus, it is easy to understand how law, instead of checking injustice, becomes the invincible weapon of the unjust. It is easy to understand why the law is used by the legislator to destroy in varying degrees among the rest of the people their personal independence by slavery, their liberty by oppression, and their property by plunder. This is done for the benefit of the person who makes the law and in proportion to the power that he holds. And then the next paragraph is entitled Victims of Lawful Plunder. Now see if you can find yourself in this. Men naturally rebel against the injustices of which they are victims. Thus, when plunder is organized by law for the profit of those who make the law, all the plundered classes try somehow to enter, by peaceful or revolutionary means, into the making of laws. According to their degree of enlightenment, these plundered classes may purpose one of two entirely different purposes when they attempt to attain political power. Either they may wish to stop law, a lawful plunder, or they may wish to share in it. Woe to the nation when lawful plunder prevails among the mass victims of lawful plunder, and when they, in turn, seize the power to make laws. Until that happens, a few practice lawful plunder upon the many. A common practice where the right to participate in the making of law is limited to a few persons, unquote. And we have 435 lawmakers in the House of Representatives, and we have 100 senators, of course, in the Senate. Okay, quote, but then participation in the making of law becomes universal. And then men seek to balance their conflicting interests by universal plunder. Instead of rooting out the injustices found in society, they make these injustices general. As soon as the plundered classes gain political power, they establish a system of reprisals against other classes. They do not abolish legal plunder. This objective would demand more enlightenment than they possess. Instead, they emulate their evil predecessors by participating in this legal plunder, even though it is against their own interests. It is as if they were it were necessary before a reign of justice appears for everyone to suffer a cruel retribution, some for their evilness and some for their lack of understanding. Now, here are the results. The next paragraph is entitled, The Results of Legal Plunder. It is impossible to introduce into society a greater change and a greater evil than this, the conversion of the law into an instrument of plunder. What are the consequences of such a perversion? It would require volumes to describe them all. Thus, we must content ourselves with pointing out the most striking. In the first place, it erases from everyone's conscience the distinction between justice and injustice. No society can exist unless the laws are respected to a certain degree. The safest way to make laws respected is to make them respectable. When law and morality contradict each other, the citizen has the cruel alternative of either losing his moral sense or losing his respect for the law. Unquote. And there are a lot of things that are going on that are so wrong. And so you have to make a choice as a Christian. Do I respect the law? Or do I respect the moral sense that God gave us? And so, you know, there are some things that that we need to make choices about. And probably a big one would be a single word, abortion. And so let's go on. Quote, these two evils are of equal consequence, and it would be difficult for a person to choose between them. The nature of law is to maintain justice. This is so much the case that in the minds of the people, law and justice are one and the same thing. There is in all of us a strong disposition to believe that anything lawful is awful, is also legitimate. This belief is so widespread that many persons have erroneously held that things are just because law makes them so, unquote. And again, we just passed a law here in Florida that says that medical marijuana is okay. Yet in every state that it's tried, the death rates go up because they're caused by people who drive and use marijuana. And so, there are many things. The selling of alcohol. We're not even supposed to look at it, and yet they sell it in the stores all the time. And what can we do about it? There's not much we can do about it until we get in control. All right, let's go on. Quote, thus, in order to make plunder appear just and sacred to many consciences, it is only necessary for the law to decree and sanction it. Slavery, restrictions, and monopoly find defenders not only among those who profit from them, but also among those who suffer from them. And then we're going to skip some pages here, and we're going to go back to some more of Friedrich Bastiat's book. And we're going to continue following. We'll start with his next paragraph that says, two kinds of plunder. Mr. D.M. is a politician and writer, and he, adopting the thought contained in a famous proclamation by Mr. Collier, and he has said, "We must make war against socialism." According to the definition of socialism advanced by Mr. Charles Dupin, he meant we must make war against plunder. But of what plunder was he speaking? For there are two kinds of plunder, legal and illegal. I do not think that illegal plunder, such as theft or swindling, which the penal code defines, anticipates, and punishes, can be called socialism. It is not this kind of plunder that systematically threatens the foundations of society. Anyway, the war against this kind of plunder has not waited for the command of these gentlemen. The war against illegal plunder has been fought since the beginning of the world. Long before the revolution of February 1848, long before the appearance even of socialism itself, France has provided police, judges, gendarmes, prisons, dungeons, and scaffolds for the purpose of fighting illegal plunder. The law itself conducts this war, and it is my wish and opinion that the law should always maintain this attitude toward plunder. How to identify legal plunder? But how is this legal plunder to be identified? Quite simply, see if the law takes from some persons what belongs to them and gives it to other persons to whom it does not belong. See if the law benefits one citizen at the expense of another by doing what the citizen himself cannot do without committing a crime. Then abolish this law without delay, for it is not only an evil itself, but also it is a fertile source for further evils because it invites reprisals. If such a law, which may be an isolated case, is not established, abolished immediately, it will spread, multiply, and develop into a system. Close quote. I want to stop there just for a minute, and I want you to think about what we read. And it's saying when you take, the first thing you have to understand is that government does not have any money. Government does not have any money. So if government is going to help people, government has to take people, has to take money from people who have money. And sometimes even the people they take it from don't really have it, but they take it anyway. And it's just like what you see in the movies during the times of the 1200s and 1100s, during the times of Robin Hood. And, you know, they would just come to people, and the people would say, "I don't have any money." "Well, you better find some someplace. You better give us this or you better give us that. The king wants money." And somehow, some way, you must find a way to have that money. And it's the same thing today. No? Oh, yes, it is the same thing today. And all you have to do is not pay your taxes. And here comes the greatest collection agency in the world, the IRS. And they'll get the money from you. One way or another, they'll get the money from you. Now, here too, it talks about it takes from one person and it gives it to another person. And if we did this same thing on an individual basis, we would have to go to jail for what we do. But the government does the same thing that we do as an individual, and it's okay because that is legal for the government to do it. They passed a law that they can do it. Now let me read those two paragraphs again, and then we'll go on. But how is this legal plunder to be identified? Quite simply, see if the law takes from some persons what belongs to them and gives it to other persons to whom it does not belong. See if the law benefits one citizen at the expense of another, by doing what the citizen himself cannot do without committing a crime. Then abolish this law without delay, for it is not only an evil itself, but also it is a fertile source for further evils because it invites reprisals. If such a law, which may be an isolated case, is not abolished immediately, it will spread, multiply, and develop into a system. And oh boy, don't we have the systems. The person who profits from this law will complain bitterly, defending his acquired rights. He will claim that the state is obligated to protect and encourage his particular industry, that this procedure enriches the state because the protected industry, and that's welfare, the protected industry is thus able to spend more and to pay higher wages to the poor working men. Do not listen to this sophistry by vested interests. The acceptance of these arguments will build legal plunder into a whole system. In fact, this has already occurred. The present-day delusion is an attempt to enrich everyone at the expense of everyone else, to make plunder universal under the pretense of organizing it. The next paragraph, this will be interesting to you. Some of these names you'll recognize, and some of these names you won't recognize. But these are all legal plunder, going by different names. So let's get started on these. And I might stop as we go along, just explain how some of these are, because we're just going to talk about a list. Now, legal plunder can be committed in an infinite number of ways. Thus, we have an infinite number of plans for organizing it. Tariffs, protection, benefits, subsidies, encouragements, progressive taxation. Now, that's a big one because that's one we already have. We have all of these, as a matter of fact. They're just different names that we don't recognize. But this progressive taxation, what that is the rate increases as taxable income increases. And then public schools, yep, we have those too. They're better named government schools, and their whole idea in government schools is to dumb down the students, because the less they know and understand about what's going on, the easier they are to control. And then guaranteed jobs, guaranteed profits, minimum wages. Now there's one that I bet you haven't thought of. Minimum wages, a communistic idea. Isn't that something? A right to relief, welfare. A right to the tools of labor, free credit, and so on and so on. All these plans as a whole with their common aim of legal plunder, and this constitutes socialism. So we have plenty of it in the United States. Now, since under this definition, socialism is a body of doctrine, what attack can be made against it other than a war of doctrine? If you find this socialist doctrine to be false, absurd, and evil, then refute it. And the more false, the more absurd, and the more evil it is, the easier it will be to refute. Above all, if you wish to be strong, begin by rooting out every practice of socialism that may have crept into your legislation. This will be no light task. And then socialism is legal plunder. Mr. D.M. has been accused of desiring to fight socialism by the use of brute force. He ought to be exonerated from this accusation, for he has plainly said the war that we must fight against socialism must be in harmony with law, honor, and justice. But why does not Mr. D.M. see that he has placed himself in a vicious cycle? You would use the law to oppose socialism, but it is upon the law that socialism itself relies. Socialists desire to practice legal plunder, not illegal plunder. Socialists, like all other monopolists, desire to make law their own weapon. And when once the law is on the side of socialism, how can it be used against socialism? For when plunder is encouraged by the law, it does not fear your courts, your gendarmes, and your prisons. Rather, it may call upon them for help. And you've heard of political prisoners. Now, just to let you know, gendarmes is a police. It's a police officer in several European countries. Also, it's a soldier with authority over civilians. To prevent this, you must exclude socialism from entering into the making of laws, and you would prevent socialists from entering the legislative palace. You should not succeed, I predict, so long as legal plunder continues to be the main business of the legislature. It is illogical, in fact, absurd, to assume otherwise. We don't have much time left. We still have some more that we can go over, and we'll do that next time. But I just want you to know that we're going over these things kind of fast. I hope you catch it. I hope it interests you enough that you'll get this book. This book is called The Law by Friedrich Bastiat. As a matter of fact, I recommend to you that go to the bookstores and ask for Friedrich Bastiat. Now, he won't be there, but his name will. Ask for Friedrich Bastiat and get all the books that he has, because he's a great conservative. He understands government, and it'll help you to understand what we're trying to do on this program. So comes the end of today's message. We appreciate so much that you spent time to be with us. If you enjoy our program, would you please take time to send us any questions you might have, along with a love offering of any amount? And if you send at least $25, we will send you a 92-page book, When Good Men Do Nothing, Who Will Speak? Our address is The Patriot, 1776, at 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Again, The Patriot, 1776. The address is 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Talk to you again next time. Goodbye now.